Speak your mind. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
Call his wife and hey, 405. McMonagle here with you on the fan. Got you for one more hour. Still taking your calls at 888-808-1019. Talking a lot of baseball, obviously. We threw in a little bit of football as well. The Giants and Hard Knocks still kind of on the forefront of my mind. But baseball, last night, both teams gained ground. It was a perfect evening for New York baseball. The Yankees get a victory, a close, hard-fought victory where at any moment it was about to slip through their fingers. And for the first time in a month, it felt like they were able to hold off the incoming and impending doom. And the bullpen did their job, and every move the manager made was pitch perfect. And it was enough out of this bullpen that has floundered at such a level over the last month, and this pitching staff overall that has floundered over the last month so much, to be able to make two runs from Trent Grisham of all people, with a RBI double early in the game and then a sacrifice fly. And two runs were enough as the Yankees win 2-1. Clay Holmes comes in the eighth to get a four-out save, promptly gives up a line drive up the gap that Grisham chases down. It really was the Trent Grisham game. And the Yankees win a game they absolutely must have. And tonight now is a game they absolutely must have to win their first series in a month, to win their first series in the last eight, and to hopefully head into this, what will be the biggest series of the year against Baltimore, the team they are now chasing by two games. As I said, perfect night for New York baseball. Yankees win, Orioles lose, Red Sox lose, and now they are two games out, four and a half games up in the wild card, two games out of a division. And they are looking to win their first series with Nestor Cortez on the mound tonight in Tampa, trying to build momentum heading into a very important series against Baltimore before the All-Star break. And the Mets, they take care of business as well. It's the same typical names, whether it's obviously Severino with the decent start, and he's been so good for the Mets this year. And then, of course, it's Vientos. It's Iglesias 3-for-4 with big hits with runners in scoring position. It's just the Mets continuing to do what they do. They've taken the first two of this series against Washington, looking to get greedy here, as the same thing for them. San Diego loses. They are now a half a game out of the wild card. And all that is between them and being in a playoff position. Because I don't expect San Diego necessarily to win out. Who knows? But theoretically, all that is in front of them is one game against the Nationals, who, despite splitting the last four-game series, the Mets have played very well against, and a three-game set against the awful Colorado Rockies. They are four games away. Now, this team is one game over 500, and they've struggled to do more than that. They've kind of been in this holding pattern. After the initial really great run that got them back to around 500, they, you know, had an eight-game road trip where they went 4-4. They've had that trouble to get, you know, a game over 500, two games over 500, three games over 500. They've kind of hovered between a game over and a game under, for the last week. And now is the opportunity to win a couple of games in a row, have an excellent homestand, win 5 of 6, which is now might have sounded greedy to start these six games, but now having taken the first two seems more than plausible as they get ready for the Rockies, with one more game tonight against Washington. If you can do that, if you can win three of the next four and put yourself three games over 500, you could be looking at a Mets team, three games over 500, in a wild card spot heading into the All-Star break. And to have thought that possible a month ago, we would have called you crazy. And that's a statement on how fast it's been done. It's a statement with the brand of baseball that it's been done. It's a statement to this general manager that he has no choice but to bolster the one issue that this team has right now, the one glaring, gaping hole that is the bullpen. And now, you know, Buto got his first career save last night. Guys like that absolutely can help stem the tide until the trade deadline. You could go out and get a starting pitcher and move some of this starting pitcher depth into the bullpen. There are different ways to go about it. But despite maybe not having an ace of the staff, I feel like the starting pitching is in a good spot. You've got a bunch of guys that are solid twos and threes. Quintana, who's been that his entire career, really, is starting to turn it around. Severino has shown what he's done all year. Manaea's in a good stretch. Peterson's in a good stretch. I mean, right now it just feels like this rotation, waiting for Senga to return, who looks like he's going to have a rehab assignment shortly, despite really not having that top of the rotation guy, has a pretty solid rotation 1-5. And the only issue is they don't go deep into games, and that speaks to the bullpen, the one gaping hole this general manager needs to fix. But ultimately, these two teams with two good nights, the Mets looking to continue their momentum and finally get over the hump of being just around 500, and the Yankees looking to just stop the bleeding and win a freaking series. And tonight's an important game heading into a Baltimore series that, you know, could determine where they are in this division. If they get swept by Baltimore and you are 5-6 games out of first place, what does that say to Brian Cashman? So big games for the Yankees and Mets coming up as we head into the All-Star break. Big games last night for them, and a baseball season that's just really getting underway and a football season that's just starting. And I know what Brett Long Island wants to talk about. Brett, how are you?
Good morning, Chris. I was in the groups, Giants groups, and I had posted that, you know, I'm a big Saquon fan. You know, I went to this final year. Me and my buddy took a road trip to Penn State against Harbaugh, Michigan. We got to watch Barkley run a 70-yard touchdown right at us. I think he was a great Giant, right? Mm-hmm. Very, very upset to see him lose. But I wrote, you know, after letting it digest, that I was happy that he moved on, because when I saw all of the contracts coming in that weren't named McCaffrey, I wouldn't spend $13, $14 million a year on a running back. It just doesn't line up. It's not good business, right? So right. Let's look at it from that point of view. Okay. So I missed his leadership. I missed what he offered on the offense. And then two of the comments that came back, you know how these things go. You know you're going to get all different stuff. So two of the things that came back, one, somebody had wrote, I don't know what I'm talking about with the money, because the team, both players, took this. It was the same cap hit. Singletary and Barkley was the same cap hit in 2024. I forgot what it was. They took the same cap hit. And then I said back, I wasn't arguing the cap hit. I was arguing the money, right? The salary. Because the cap you could play with a little bit more. I just never heard that one. I didn't know if that was even a thing. And then the second thing was an Eagles fan. I love how these Eagles fans are in the Giants forums, you know? This guy was, like, going off about how good Swift was and how he was able to play all the games. Barkley will be able to play. They'll use him sparingly, which I argued, if you use him sparingly, that's not worth the contract. And second of all, I said, I agree. I think Swift is really good. I said to the guy, did you see his contract? He's with the Bears. He's getting $8 million a year. That, like, proved my point. So, A, I wanted to know if you thought anything about how the cap, you know, the flexibility of the cap, because I've never heard you talk about it either. You know, and also, you know, as far, like I said, does it come down to the business end of it, Chris? Is it that simple that he's not worth that much money?
I'm looking that up right now.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, someone's got Devin Singletary cap hit in 24, 37.5, Saquon Barkley cap hit in 24, 38. Now, I mean, I don't 38 million, 3.8 million. That wouldn't continue for forever, obviously, with the amount of money he's making. That might be the case this year, but that wouldn't be the case moving forward. And I'm not even sure that's entirely true. I'd have to look into it. It is the first time I'm hearing it, I'll be honest with you. But the amount of money is different, and I still don't like the idea of paying the running back that much money. And yeah, oh, absolutely.
And then the guaranteed money, too, Chris.
The guaranteed money, too, yeah. But it comes down, it's 100% about business. It's not about his ability. It's not about, I mean, yes, he's injured.
And staying
he's injury
healthy.
Prone. Yeah, he's injury prone, and he's 27 years old. But that's part of the reason why you don't want to give him the money. It's not necessarily you don't think this year he could be a dynamic running back, or even next year he could be a dynamic running back. It's just the metrics show you he's bound to regress. It's a young man's position, And it's just not worth it, especially considering where the Giants roster is. If the Giants had a roster like Philadelphia, if the Giants had a roster like San Francisco, if the Giants had a roster where you felt they were ready to win and you don't want to lose that one dynamic weapon in your offense, then it would make more sense. But the Giants just aren't there.
Yeah.
And they have, and unfortunately for running backs and unfortunately for Saquon Barkley, they are the cherry on the sundae. They are not the ice cream. That's just, it's just a fact. They are not a building block of an organization. And right now it just feels like, I know you're optimistic, I understand that. It feels like the Giants are in the beginning of a building block type season. And unfortunately for you, and this is where we disagree, and I'm not trying to pick a fight with you, Brett. I'm just trying to make my point here.
And I have one more point, the
playoff year and forcing their hand, the way Daniel Jones played down the stretch of that year into the wild card game against Minnesota, winning those games that year, winning that playoff game. Unfortunately, and I don't like turning away playoff wins, and that day was incredible, but ultimately it hindered what needed to happen. They needed to have this sort of rebuild with Dable and Shane, and it cost them last year. Like, they should have been doing this already. That really impressive year one forced their hand and made them change how to go about things. The roster is still in disarray. They still need a bunch more talent. They still need this sort of developmental type year and roster building type year. So Saquon Barkley just doesn't make any sense for them.
Chris, you just remind me of a friend of mine, this guy Chris, right? Yeah, big Yankee fan, Giants fan. Like, with the Yankees, you know, he'll be telling me this season's over, you know, like, they lose a couple of series, and I'll be like, Chris, it's May.
Right.
He's like, I'm not watching anymore. And then the Giants, like, you know, after the first game with Dallas, he's like, that's it, they won't make the playoffs. Then, you know. And yes, he might be right. It's not the point. My point is fandom, right?
Yeah.
Fandom is about... Like, look at the Mets fans. I laugh at some of the Mets fans. I'm sorry, but you know what? You guys were 11 games back. Lindor was done. The team was terrible. Fire everybody, right? And this was in what? Same thing, like June?
Yeah.
And then now you're talking about being three games over. How about the fans? That I told you, guy at work, big Mets fan, wears the Mets caps all the time. That cap came off. I'm not watching them anymore. Same old Mets. It's like, how can you watch them again now, though? You're supposed to be a fan. And, Chris, the last thing I'll say is about you with the Giants.
Yeah.
Every year we talk, you say the same thing. You go week to week to week to week to week, and you analyze, and you tell me how brutally honest you're being week to week to week. Okay, how do you defend yourself now? You just said before, I'm hopeful. You know, what Dable can do in the Giants. And then the next thing you say is, when Saquon scores multiple touchdowns against us and we lose 45-3, we won't score. How is that hopeful when we're in July? And we don't know what the Giants are. You're supposed to be a fan. Chris, have a great day, man. I'm leaving on that one.
You got it, buddy. It was tongue-in-cheek. You know, I'm playing the pessimistic Giant fan for half a second there. But we all know the Eagles are better. The Eagles have kicked the Giants' ass. Like, this is where, like you mentioned, you talk about fandom a lot, Brett. And, you know, no disrespect to you, but you act like you're some sort of, you know, king of fandom. And you have the way fans should behave, and everybody else who doesn't act like you is lesser of a fan. I'm lesser of a fan because I'm allowing my son to like other football teams. I'm a lesser of a fan because I doubt them to start the year. I'm a lesser of a fan, lesser of a fan, lesser of a fan. I love that you're the authority on fandom, Brett. But let me just tell you this. I agree with you on some of the things you said about fandom. A Met fan can be pessimistic. A Met fan can say, this team stinks. I have no faith in them. It's tough to be a fan when you no longer will wear the cap you love and then say you can't watch them anymore. Like that I agree with you. If you're going to be a fan, you got to go through it with them. You could be pessimistic and believe that it's ultimately all in vain and it's not going to work out. That's part of fandom. You make it sound like unless you think they're going to win every day, you're not being a legitimate fan. It's ridiculous. But to give up on them and then say I'm done with them, yes, that's you're not being a good fan in that aspect. But who cares? Fandom is fandom. I disagree with Joe Beningo. I know he wrote the book. I love Joe. I don't think there are rules to fandom other than you want what's best for your team. Like, that's about it. But I'm glad you have all the answers to fandom. But you could be pessimistic. And when you mention the Yankees and Giants and how, like, my fandom is different for the two of them. And my level of optimism and pessimism is different for the two of them. Yes, the Giants have won a championship more recently. Yes, 2011 is more recent than 2009. And those two championships from the Giants were tremendous. Since then, like, the Yankees have not won a World Series. The Yankees have been disappointing. The Yankee fans are at their wits' end because they've been to the ALCS three times in the last 6 years. The Yankees haven't had a losing season in 30 seasons. The Yankees consistently make the playoffs. The Yankees right now are just falling apart. They're terrible. I can't watch them. I'm turning off the television. Blah, blah. They're the first wild card. They have the fourth best record in baseball. And we're sick to our stomachs about it. The New York Giants have been the dreck of the NFL for 5, 6, 7 years. They're consistently dead by Thanksgiving. They've gone through how many coaches over the last, how many idiots have they hired and fired over the last 6 or 7 years? I mean, it's not the same thing. My pessimism is different because they have given me crap. The Yankees have given me frustration. The Giants have given me disaster. The Giants have given me, I'm focused on my fantasy football team and my gambling by Halloween. There's a difference. And if I make a joke about the Eagles kicking the crap out of the Giants, do you know why? It's because since Ron Dixon ran back an opening kickoff, that's what's happened. That's the last time I can remember the Giants beating the Eagles in a big game. Like, I'm not kidding. And you can name, I got Jeff Garcia in an Eagles uniform kicking my ass. Time and time again, every time the Giants play the Eagles, we get our ass kicked for 20 years. That's just the nature of it. Even mix in the Super Bowls, that's fine, I get it. And we've done it at the expense of the Cowboys, and we've done it at the expense of the Packers, and we've done it at the expense of other teams, not the Eagles. Giants play the Eagles kick ass. Whether it's Matt Dodge punting the ball down the middle, there's a million circumstances. So, yeah, do I think it's best that the Giants moved on from Saquon Barkley? Absolutely. Do I think he's going to have a game where he comes into MetLife and torches the Giants for 200 rushing yards and beats them 35-10? Of course I do, because that's what they've done for 20 years. But my point is, I won't care that it's Saquon Barkley doing it to me. What do I care? I've had Westbrook do it to me for a generation. Swift do it to me last year. Boston Scott does it to me every year. Why the hell would I care if Saquon Barkley does it to me? That's my difference. I'm unlike the owner of the Giants. I'm not heartbroken. I don't have a personal connection to Saquon Barkley. I think he's a great guy and a good dude and represented the Giants as well as anybody could represent them. I have no issues with Saquon Barkley. God bless. But I haven't built up some sort of real love and equity with a guy who hasn't helped me win. That's how it works. Other than Don Mattingly, like, we don't have a lot of these great connection to players who have been injured, missed seasons, and haven't won anything. As great as they may be. So, yeah, I fully expect Saquon Barkley to torch the Giants. Because that's what happens when the Giants play the Eagles. So why would I care whether it's Saquon Barkley or Boston Scott? Why would I care? I don't. I don't care. It's not going to cost me an ounce of sleep. I'm used to the Eagles kicking my ass. I'm used to it. And I still think that's the scenario we're in. They have a better roster. They have the better team. The Giants are kind of in a rebuild situation. And the quarterback can't stay healthy, and I don't trust him. And the rest of the roster, other than maybe the front seven, needs a hell of a lot of work. So, I don't know. Why am I pessimistic with the Giants? Because they've been as bad as any team in the NFL over the last 7 years. They haven't just been disappointing. They haven't just, you know, gotten to the wild card game every year and failed. They haven't done what the Yankees have done. Ultimately the Yankees have failed. Ultimately the Yankees have been disappointing. They've given me great seasons. No joke. This is the epitome of the difference. Right now, every single Yankee fan is really upset because this year is looking just like 2022. It's disgusting. It's just like 2022. It's making me sick. It's exactly like 2 years ago. It's the same thing. Boone's saying the same thing. Everything's exactly the same. It's the exact same thing as 2022. I can't take it anymore. It's the exact same thing as 2022. They won 99 games, won a division, and were playing in the ALCS in 2022. And the Yankee fans can't stand the idea of it being that. Can you imagine a Giant fan saying, oh my God, it's just like 2 years ago when they won the division and played in the NFC Championship game. It's just like that. How can I live? That's the difference. That's the difference. A division title and losing and being one of the final four teams is a disaster for the New York Yankees. And for the Giants, we'd all throw a party if they win 8 games.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
There's a snap. There's a kick. It is up. It is no good. No one missed. 4 seconds left. The Giants have won Super Bowl 25 by the score of 20-19.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
So, you know, I wasn't sure I would ever be able to say something like this, but now I can. I have something in common with Matthew McConaughey. I'm very excited about it. And no, I haven't picked up a nude bongo class or anything like that, but Matthew McConaughey just put out a picture on Instagram where the entire right side of his face and eye are swollen shut because of a bee sting. And I have had balloon hand for the last 2 days because I got stung by a bee and my hand completely swelled up to, I mean, it's finally just starting to dissipate now. Like, it was the top of my hand. Honestly, it looked like I had a balloon under my skin. I could not believe how much my hand swelled up after getting stung by a bee the other day. If you didn't hear the story, I was trying to put my hose away. And I mean my garden hose, in the backyard. I have one of those like little plastic boxes with the crank in it where you put the hose in it and it's an easy, just like, you know, you crank up the hose inside that thing. And it got like jammed or something and I went to stick my hand in it to like unjam the hose and all of a sudden like 5 bees came flying out at my face and I got stung like 4 times. I got stung 3 times in my right arm and once in my hand and the right arm swelled a little bit. And I've kind of got some, like, you know, irritated skin there, but not so bad. But my hand freaking blew up. It's just starting to go away now. And look, and now I didn't have it nearly as bad. McConaughey's entire face is swollen. He can't even look out of his eye. But they're no joke. I could not believe the amount of swelling I was dealing with. I got nervous. I thought I was going to have to go to the hospital. But it's starting to dissipate now. All good. But I just saw that picture of McConaughey. I know what you're going through, Matt. Me and you have a lot in common, buddy. All right, all right, all right. 4:33. Let's get to the calls here as we have a half an hour into the warm-up show at 5 o'clock. My man Danny in Belrose. What's up, Danny?
Yeah, good morning, Chris. How are you today?
I'm doing all right. The hand swelling's going down. The Yankees won a game. What else could I ask for?
Finally, the Rock has come back to
New Jersey. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Do you smell what the Rock is cooking? So, yeah, the Yankees, looked much better yesterday. I mean, some guys still need to, you know, wake up. But overall, good game. And,
one game does not mean, you know, all of a sudden they're out of this tailspin. They have proven to last They have proven to like last in these tailspins for a long, extended period of time. So, but I don't think any Yankee fan is suddenly. I'm just hopeful because it's the kind of win that hopefully can. We've seen big outbursts offensively, that's led to nothing. We saw a 16-run game in Toronto. We saw the big 3-run home run game by Rice and 10 runs against the Red Sox, and those games led to absolutely nothing. So hopefully a hard-fought game where they needed to get the bullpen through scary situations, and they needed to hold on to a game, and they were able to, maybe that will spark them, hopefully.
Yeah, Well, you know, they say great pitching beats good hitting. Even though they got out hit, the pitching was better yesterday, and that's the main reason I called. You know, it's not like they forgot how to pitch. It's just they haven't been sharp. You know, they need a little fine tooling, and you know how it is. You know.
No, I mean, listen, Danny. I'm scared about Carlos Rodon. I've been saying it since his second bad start or his third bad start. You know, I heard Evan today talk about the New York angle, and I've mentioned that too, tough pitching in New York. Everything other than the stretch of the first 10 starts of this season, from his injury last year to when he came back last year and was unable to pitch really well and had a little bit of a back issue and was blowing kisses to the fan and everything like that, he has been unable to deal with any level of adversity. That's just a fact. When things are going well, he's okay. He had 10 straight starts. He had an ERA under 3. It looked like he was about to have a promising all-star type season. And when you watch these games now that he's struggling, yes, his fastball is getting hit. Even though I saw a stat, I think Cuddy or Hoke put out the stat that his fastball actually had the best movement and velocity of any fastball in baseball yesterday. Like he had really the other day, he had great numbers on his fastball, and yet the exit velocity from it was through the roof, over 100. Like the fastball is getting killed, even though it's got good movement. Something's up. But when you watch him pitch, the first hit of the game was a looping line drive that just by a half an inch. And I don't know if Glaber didn't time his jump just right, but it seemed like, man, it was a catchable ball, and it was just over Glaber's glove. And when something like that happens, that's it. That's it. A little infield single, a ball, a roller that the first baseman doesn't, Ben Rice doesn't handle and allows to roll and hit the bag when he thought it might go foul. The littlest thing, the smallest little piece of adversity he has to deal with. He never bears down and gets a pitch. He never bears down and gets the big strikeout. He never bears down and gets the double play ground ball. Ever. If something goes wrong, it's going to go completely wrong. And that's a major problem for a starting pitcher, certainly one who pitches under the scrutiny of New York. And obviously, he's an emotional roller coaster as well. I mean, the guy is on the mound. We've seen screaming. We've seen crying. We've seen post games where he's just blatantly sad. Like, we have seen every single emotion from this guy. Like, it's just everything's on his sleeve. And I appreciate that fact. And I'm sure he's desperate to be successful and he wants to. Like, I don't think this is a Carl Pavano thing where, you know, he's literally got a bruised ass and he's missing, you know, 6 weeks. I think he wants to be out there. I think he desperately wants to be successful. And I think he puts too much pressure on himself. But I don't care the reason. The problem is the guy just, he cannot deal with adversity. So, yeah, overall, Luis Gil, I think it is mostly about his mechanics. It is about his pitch release. It is about certain things he's got to hone and sharpen. And it's a rookie pitcher coming into his own, trying to figure these things out. I totally agree with that. Stroman, he's not going to be great every start. He's going to go through a stretch. He's not a Cy Young winner. He's not going to be dominant all year. He's going to go through some stretches where he's really good, some stretches where he struggles. So, yeah, I mean, I expect him to turn around and be a pretty damn good pitcher. Cole's just getting his season underway. Nestor Cortez has weird road home splits, but I don't expect that to necessarily continue. And I think he's, you know, a savvy kind of pitcher. I don't know if he's a dominant guy, but I think he's savvy and pretty good in Yankee Stadium. He can be dominant. The one guy who does scare me is Carlos Rodon. The one guy where I don't think you could just brush it off as saying, well, listen, they'll come around. They're going through they had a great start. Now they're having a tough stretch. It happens. I would agree with every other starting pitcher except Carlos Rodon. He scares the hell out of me. And considering the money he got, the contract he got, the idea that he scares the hell out of me a year and a half in is unfortunate. And the bullpen's just not good enough. Like, the top of it, Clay Holmes is a, you know, I heard Emmanuel Babari in the final call called him Cardiac Clay. I didn't know that was a nickname for every game. I thought that was like when he made you nervous, you call him Cardiac Clay. He had a 1-2-3 ninth. I don't know if he's warranted Cardiac Clay in that scenario, but clearly, while still being an all-star pitcher and a solid closer, he's not elite. He's not Mariano. He's going to blow saves. Weaver's shown to be good. Tonkin has done a great job. And we're starting to see Canely come around. But other than that, an impressive performance here from Hill. Cousins yesterday with a good performance. So the bullpen's coming around, but ultimately there's the two or three guys you trust and really nobody else that's worth anything. So they need some relievers to get, you know, to come in here and trade for to get better. But the starting pitching, I don't know if they're going to get another starting pitcher, and I agree with you. I think they're okay. I have some confidence other than Carlos Rodon. Eric and Ronkonkoma, what's up, Eric?
Hey, C-Man, good morning. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. It just goes to show how, you know, you can understand how serious it is for someone who's allergic to those things.
Of course, yeah.
You know, I mean, you're not.
I'd never been stung by a bee. It's the first time in my life. Yeah. I always had the three things I would, you know, jokingly brag about. I've never had never had a cavity, never broke a bone, never stung by a bee. Those are like the three things I held on to as some sort of, I thought I was Bruce Willis and Unbreakable. Like they're just things they're just things that don't happen.
They don't happen to the big fella.
Things don't happen to the big fella. But unfortunately, last year I had my first cavity. I'm ashamed to admit, and now I've been stung by a bee. All I have left is I've never broken a bone. So hanging on to my Bruce Willis theory.
There you go. I really don't like to repeat myself if I don't have to, mm-hmm. and I really don't like to call people out, but sometimes circumstances require it. So here we go.
Who are you going to call out?
Brett.
Oh, okay? Brett? Don't worry about it, bro.
Okay. No. There's a reason week four of the Giants last week, they played Seattle, and they lost that game, and he came on after that saying he was throwing in the towel. And I even called him out on it last year. And he came on afterwards and said I was right because he did. All right, so he's got a very short memory. I'm sorry. Look, fans.
Fans are fans.
We're somewhat delusional to a point, okay? But don't, you know, let's not forget that things happened, okay? You know, because if you're going to call somebody out about, you know, where they are, you know, during the season as far as if you're going to be negative, let's remember where you were after a quarter of the season last year.
Yeah.
Okay?
Brad, where were you after Seattle?
The team that can do no wrong in your eyes, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, look, I mean, and this is coming from a guy whose team hasn't won anything since '86.
Right.
Okay? So, I mean, yes, you know, we get down on our teams. We get excited when they play well. We're allowed to go back and forth.
I completely agree. There are no real rules to the thing. Other than you want what's best for your team. And that might even be Brett and other people would get on me last year. I wanted the Giants to lose games. I did. And I feel even more confident in that feeling, and I wish they had watching these meetings. I mean, I wish Brian Daboll didn't allow, you know, allow DiVincenzo to come. DiVincenzo, my God, I'm losing my mind. That's a good one. DeVito to come in and win games for them and get to the point where now those meetings, he had a meaningless with that quarterback. And you got to go and try and beg New England for that third pick, and ultimately didn't get it. That's like even rules like that. I was I don't know how else to say it. I wanted the Giants to lose because I thought it was what's best for the franchise. The only rule for a fan is to want what's best for the team. I disagree with people who think Brian Cashman needs to go for the Yankees to be successful, but I'm not going to call them bad fans. They think that's what's best for the team. That's the one rule. You could disagree on it. You can have a ridiculous opinion of it on what's best. But as long as in your heart you believe it's what's best, that's the only rule. And I wanted the Giants to lose last year. And people question your fandom when you say that. The season was dead. They weren't going anywhere. It was. And I wanted the quarterback because that's what's best for the franchise. And watching those meetings and watching what we've seen here in the first few episodes of Hard Knocks, I've never been more sure I was correct in my thinking. Because I want Brian Daboll to do what he did in that meeting. I want Brian Daboll to teach. I want Brian Daboll to pick his guy that he's excited about and go about building a winning, sustaining, winning franchise, which the Giants, honestly, weren't even with Eli Manning. Yes, they won two Super Bowls. I wouldn't trade them for a sustained winning thing. You get two Super Bowls, that's good enough. So I'm thrilled in the Eli Manning era. I'll love Eli Manning till the day I die. But even with Eli Manning, they didn't have every single year, 10, 11, 12 games, you know, sustained winning playoffs every year. They didn't have that. They had, you know, they only won the playoff games in the year of their Super Bowl wins, and they missed the playoffs a ton. And the end of his career, forget about it. Again, I'm not saying I'm unhappy with it or I would trade it for anything. They won two Super Bowls, and one of them in particular, the first one against the undefeated Patriots, is probably the greatest championship I have, and I'm a Yankee fan. I mean, that's as good as it gets, beating the undefeated Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. But having said that, even they didn't have sustained winning. That's what I want. I want that every year I know they're going to be either winning the division, competing for the division, because they have the quarterback. Now, there are sometimes you can chase it. Sometimes it's impossible. Sometimes you're in a situation where it's improbable and you can't do it. You can't manipulate the draft. You won some games. You're picking 17th. There are times when you can. And in the times when you can, you go do it. And everybody, oh, it was more important to beat the Patriots, you know, in the second to last week of the year, whenever it was, when they were terrible. Who cares about that win? Does anyone remember the score? Does anyone remember what happened in that game? We moved right on to the next game in our fantasy championships. Don't give a damn.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Far back to pass, takes a deep drop, steps up, looking to his right. The pass intercepted by the Giants at the 40-yard line. Intercepted by the Giants. Corey Webster got the pick, and he's tackled at the Packer 34.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 4:51, and you asked for it, and you got it. Let's get back to the phone calls, and Mitch is with us, 888-808-1019. We got 9 minutes left before the warm-up show on this Thursday morning. Let's get as many as we can, and Mitchell, he heeded the call. What's up, Mitch?
Good morning, Big Mac. I got to tell you, it was a nice win by the Yankees last night. We still don't have any offense going on, but at least we got a win yesterday, and hopefully tonight we get another win. But you know, Big Mac, I keep on looking at the team. I talk to my friends with my partner with the season tickets. The Yankees are still missing a few parts to it. Like, you know, their bench is very weak. That's number one. Number two, I just don't understand why is Judge not playing more in center field now? They're just trying to give him some more rest.
Yeah.
That's number two. Okay, number three, LeMayo is starting to hit a little bit now. So, you know, I think the second half of the year he'll be fine. But the bigger part that I just don't understand with the Yankees is you have a catcher that has a gun, and the kid is starting to bat. His average is getting up there, and they don't play well enough. Why are they only playing him once every 4 days?
No, they're playing him. Mitch, and thank you for the call. I don't know where you call from sometimes, Mitch. You got to, you know. A lot of background noise there. A lot of night games. I think Wells just started like three games in a row. They're going to give Trevino a little bit of a run. And you got to remember, too, the pitching has been in disarray. Whatever we think about his arm and his inability to throw out base runners, which he did throw out a base stealer last night, he's one of, if not the premier, strike stealer in all of baseball. And he's a veteran catcher, not a rookie catcher like Wells. And especially for Luis Gil and maybe Carlos Rodon, they did let Wells catch Rodon the other day. But I think they want to give the veteran presence and the pitch framer to these pitchers to try and help them fight through this. And to, like, it's not just the offense. I know the offense is struggling. The pitching's been worse. I think that's been part of it. I think you want to have your veteran catcher in there stealing strikes for you. I know it hurts the base running game, but they've always believed more in pitch framing and strike stealing than they believe in throwing out runners. That's just how the Yankees go about business. So he's the veteran catcher. He's won a Platinum Glove 2 years ago, and they want him especially to help guys who are struggling to get through games. But I agree. I think moving forward, there's no doubt. We are going to see more Wells than we see Trevino. I think we've already seen it. Right now, over the last five games, I think Trevino is the one who's played one out of four. Not the other way around. Liam in Blue Point. What's up, Liam? Liam.
Hey, how you doing, Chris?
Good. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing pretty good. I just want to say, first off, I totally agree with what you were saying about Rendon earlier. Mm-hmm. I think you hit a nail on the head every point. But just had a question. When Rizzo comes back,
yep.
Well, if he comes back at this point, what do you think they're going to do with Rice? You think they'll give him the more playing time? Because, you know, Rizzo's a well-respected veteran, so just curious what you think they'll do.
My guess is if he continues to be hot, if Rice continues to be hitting, I think they'll play him. And I think Rizzo will be a bench platoon kind of guy, and they'll sporadically play him, maybe DH him a game or DH Rice a game. Like I don't think they would just quit on Ben Rice, but it's still going to be a few weeks. And if Ben Rice cools off, then I think they'll send him back down and just play Rizzo.
Yeah, well, I'm a big fan of Rice right now. You know,
well, how could you not be? He's been rather impressive, and I'm not sure. They're gonna want to give Rizzo a chance. Would be my guess, but I think if Ben Rice is playing well, you can't abandon him. It's just if he cools off, if suddenly you know Rizzo comes back and he's 2 for his last 25, now you could see them go to Rizzo. Like Ben Rice is gonna have to hit to stay here.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't think you got it, buddy. I don't think Ben Rice is at the point where they look at him and go, "Oh yeah, no, Ben Rice is it." Ben Rice is the guy. I don't care if he struggles for a week or two. Like we are 100% behind Ben Rice. Not with Rizzo on the roster. Maybe next year if they give him first base, that could be the case. But right now, I think it's Ben Rice has to hit the play. And if he is hitting, I don't think they'll supplant him. I don't think they'll. Rizzo was struggling before he got it. It's not like Rizzo was hot or playing well. Rizzo was awful. So I don't think they'd be in any rush to put Rizzo there. But if there's a weakness there, if he's not hitting, I don't think I think they're going to want to play Rizzo for the same reason they want to play LeMahieu. The same reason. The reason is they are veterans who have a track record, and if they get going, they can be difference makers. I don't know if they're capable of getting going. That's the thing. And I don't know how long with a 4.5 game lead in the wild card and still hanging around before the trade deadline and before the All-Star break, they deem this current time, even with the losing they're doing, they deem it good. They deem it enough to try and throw LeMahieu out there and see if he can get going. Because if he ever does, we have a difference maker on our hands. And maybe they'll throw Rizzo out there thinking, hey, if we ever get him going, we have a difference maker. We have a guy who we know can hit. A guy who we know is one. A guy who in the middle of the lineup has produced for this team. And if we could ever get him going, oh man, maybe, just maybe. But how long can you do that? That's the question. How long will they try and find the difference makers before they just play the guys who will have the higher floor? Because right now, they've just been awful. But that's going to be an interesting question. And we got to see what happens when Dominguez comes back, what happens when Stanton comes back. I mean, if all these guys come back, we forget that a month ago, not only were they winning, or 2 months ago, not only were they winning, but we were praising them for their depth. We were praising them. Oh, man, we haven't, we still got this, and we haven't got Cole or Dominguez back. We're winning. We're the best team in baseball, and we don't have Cole or Dominguez. How quickly things change. And we'll see if Dominguez, I guess it's going to take him a long time to come back. But hopefully Stanton gets back as soon as possible. I would play him now. I'm not even kidding. If he could jog in the outfield, then he could play. He was jogging anyway. I don't think he needs rehab games. I think they're 100% right. The second he could swing a bat and they're comfortable with it, put him there. But another big night, another opportunity for the New York Mets. This offense, Iglesias, OMG, this group right now, a game over 500, trying to make a statement to their general manager. We could find ourselves the next time we speak, 2 o'clock in the morning on a Friday morning, as I'll be with you in the overnights Friday, and then I'll be with you filling in for Tiki with Evan on Friday afternoon. We could be looking at a wild card team. We could be looking at a team that has secured a spot as the third wild card. That's where the Mets are right now. And they're a game over 500, and that's been their high watermark. They haven't had really, as well as they've played over the last 10 or so, it's been about a 500 team. They haven't taken that next step to get a couple of games over 500 and start building on this thing. And the time is now. Big game against Washington tonight, and then a 3-game set against Colorado.
And that's where you make your hay, and that's where you go into the All-Star break, three games up and a game up in the wild card standings. That's what I want to see from the New York Mets. And the Yankees go win a damn series. Take this game, win a series, head to Baltimore with a little momentum, and get ready for what will be the biggest series of the season yet so far. That's it for me. Thank you for calling. Thank you for listening. Fliegelman, thanks for all the help. The wild card. The warm-up show is next. I'm telling you, I'll say anything at 5 o'clock in the morning by this point. I'll catch you tomorrow. I'm out of here.
Sports Radio 101.9 FM.